You are listening to The Edge, a podcast for personal development junkies and visionaries living right at the precipice of oh shit meets fuck yeah. I'm Nadia Munda, an embodiment and relationship coach and a lover of all edges. Stick around to listen to raw, unpolished conversations where we explore our personal and collective edges in all their erotic glory. Hello, hello. Popping in real quick to let you know of an offering in December that I am so excited about. It's an online retreat called Yes, because yes is what I tend to always be shouting really loudly when I'm cheering on the women who I see in their full embodied expression when I'm working with them. And so I'm going to be offering this to only 10 women to come join me and get an experience of my work in the erotic edge and erotic mapping arena. And so I'm doing this primarily in order for you to really get a sense of what this work entails. A lot of it is really hard to describe. It's experiential and it's transformation. And I can promise you that the woman who you are when you walk in to the Zoom room in the morning or sit your booty down to the Zoom room in the morning is going to be a whole different woman than who is going to press end meeting at the end of the day. And this is great for anyone who's been possibly looking at working with me privately or who might be interested in my other offering in the new year called The Mastery of Energetics. Sex, which is an embodiment lab where I'm going to be taking 6 couples. You do not have to be partnered to apply. You can be a woman who applies, or you can be in a partnership. It's up to you. And what I'll do is I'll partner you up if you're not, and we will work as 6 couples maximum in a lab where once a month for 6 months, we go really deep into polarity practice, into embodied expression. We work on how to reignite more of the passion in your relationship if you're in one, and we work on what it feels like to really increase your capacity for surrender, for softness, for opening your heart, for showing your moment to moment expression in front of a partner, even though it freaks you out. So all of these are things that we'll be doing. And that offering includes the lab intensives once a month, but it also includes a one-on-one session with me every month as well. So if you like a hybrid of deep practice and you're an advanced practitioner who's done some sort of embodiment work or some sort of polarity work with me or with someone else, it doesn't matter, then that's going to be a really great offering for you. And the best way to sample my work and how I workshop with your body right in front of me is going to be at this online retreat called Yes. So check out the show notes and make sure to grab your spot because there's only 10 spots. Today, you are listening to a coaching episode. In these episodes, you get a little peek into what is normally a private space. My one-on-one coaching practice. This really gives you a glimpse into what it's like to be guided and held by me and will hopefully leave you with some key aha moments. Everyone who is coached here in these episodes has consented to publicizing these sessions and remains anonymous for the sake of confidentiality. Taking a deep inhale and breathing in this moment now. Breathing in how your fingertips feel, how your lips feel, how your shoulders feel. Not trying to change anything, but just being with the moment. And then letting that moment go with the exhale. And then taking a few more breaths with that same sentiment of breathing in what's true right this moment. Maybe noticing somewhere else in your body, how your toes are feeling, how your calf muscles are feeling, how your hips are feeling. And then without attaching to that, letting it go. Maybe with that final breath, using it to just tune into the center of your being today. Maybe that's at your seat and your root. Maybe it's at your solar plexus. Just breathing in presence into the moment right there. And then letting the moment go. And then from this place of feeling a little bit more rooted, a little bit more centered, a little bit more here in the now, just breathing into your heart and checking in. What's present in your heart and what is it that feels important to explore today?
Okay. I think it's the heart piece of actually being able to bring my heart into a situation or a relationship. I'm thinking specifically with my husband and partner. So I'm aware, I've become more aware that my habit is to only bring myself after I've come to a conclusion about something. So maybe I come to a decision, or I want this and this is how I want it to happen, right? So it's hard for me. It feels like a really underdeveloped muscle to stay in the place of I want or I feel, and to be able to bring myself in that place. I'm like, I don't know what to say, I don't have words. And it feels a really uncomfortable spot. So yeah, that's kind of what came up as we were breathing. And the only other piece to mention around that is I think it's something around being seen, of like really being seen for who I am, and the conclusions I can come to feel like a protective mechanism that the person's never really getting me.
Beautiful. What a deep place for us to start. So this is very rich, and this is very much an experience that so many humans have. And so the first thing I want to say before we dive in deeper is this is a very common experience. It's a common experience that I see and hear about with so many of my clients, my friends, experiences I've had, right? So I just want to normalize it and contextualize it a little bit, which is that the mind and the heart can often be in opposition to each other. And they don't have to be. They don't have to be at all. And so much of the journey is actually about bringing them into cohesion and into partnership. And what I'm hearing here is that, you know, there's something really challenging and vulnerable for you, as it would be for anyone, to bring your heart in the messy, to bring your heart in the uncertainty, in the unknown. And the only place that currently feels really safe for you to bring your heart is in the certainty, the clarity, the conclusion. Right. And so, like you said, you so beautifully pointed out yourself, was that that's a protection mechanism, that your mind comes in and goes, oh, okay, here's what we get to. Essentially your mind is creating a foundation, a solid foundation underneath you to be able to open your heart. And what I'm hearing you say is you have this deep desire to actually be able to open your heart, even when the foundation feels rocky or the environment around you emotionally or physically, but I mean, here we're really talking about the emotional environment, feels unclear and not solid. Would you say that's true?
Can you repeat that last part? So it's let me just repeat and see if I understand. So you're saying when something feels shaky externally, that I'm looking for a foundation before I can open my heart, as opposed to opening my heart in the presence of something that feels uncertain or shaky.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to check in about the yearning. Is there a deep yearning to actually be able to open in the uncertainty?
So what I'm noticing is, so if I think about it in the context of a relationship, I'm asking myself, what is the uncertainty? Like, what is the uncertainty, or what would be the hesitation? I feel like if I think about it in the context of business, it's more clear. It's like, oh, I might get it wrong or screw it up, or, you know, like there's all that. But if I sit with the relationship side of things, I guess it's, it's like that really, will you love me? Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So I felt like a tenderness and a softness come up as you were saying that. And so what were you feeling in that moment?
It's hard to describe. So I think there's just like a little there's a contraction that's coming out in that sound of like, and the contraction feels like it's starting in my heart. Like my hands are kind of like right on my breastbone, like funnily enough, like just a couple inches above my breast and my nipple, right? So it's like there's like, that's where it feels like the sound is coming from. Mm.
And why do you think you felt like a aww?
I don't know why. Yeah, it's just like that feels like that just feels like probably the question that I live in without realizing it, you know, like the that I'm probably asking myself that somewhere often.
And if you could verbalize the question, what would it be?
Do you love me? Or like, will you still love me if I tell you what I want? Will you love me? Do you love me?
Yeah. So essentially, if we were to break that down, the story there is my desire, my needs, my wants could make me unlovable. And so you are constantly on some level having to choose between love or your desire.
Yeah, that feels really true.
And how does that feel?
Feels like
What do you mean I only get love or desire? I desire love and I love desire. Like, I want both.
Yeah.
I'm just going to pause us here for a moment. Oh, literally as I said that, whatever sound was in the, was there like a sound in the background?
Oh, it was the motor from our shower. Sorry, was that coming through?
It's oh, done. Yeah, but I just wanted to make sure we didn't have to adjust something in your
no,
mic.
Sorry.
Okay, cool.
Often people say
all
they
good.
Can't.
I'm going to edit this tiny
Yeah,
little.
okay.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So what a fun dichotomy to have to live in, huh? I have to choose between love and desire and I don't get to have both. Like, yay. That's not fun, right? That's not fun at all because we get to have both. And so I'm curious if we can root this into a particular scenario, a recent incident that happened, to really root into the details and to the day-to-day to see how this story plays out, where you have to choose between getting love or getting your desires and needs met.
Okay. You just feel into that. Well, okay, I'll just go with the first thing that came. So I have a desire to live somewhere else. And I mean, I can say more about that. I have a desire to live somewhere else, and I feel stuck in taking action towards that. I guess because it also feels like if I am taking the action towards that, then it feels like I'm taking the reins or going into a level of control or something where it doesn't make space for there to be a unified effort with my partner.
And so let's start like with some basic just facts. Have you had conversations about this desire, or is this just between you and yourself?
There's been conversations.
And so what pops up on the conversations?
So mostly I say, and this has been an ongoing like 5 or 6 long time conversations, right? So but I'd say the pattern is kind of like I get frustrated with where we live, whether it's the noise in the area or the distance from aesthetic architecture or climate or friends or whatever the thing is that I'm frustrated with. And so when I'm, so I go to solution of, I want to move. I want to move. And then the conversation goes something like, well, for the piece of property that we have and the cost that we have, like, how can we find something comparable? Like, we should.
Is that your partner saying that, or are you guys workshopping this together?
That's like the gist of the response. Like, it's a very logical, like, I'm open to it if there's something better, but like, what are the chances kind of thing? And so then I might scout a little bit to see what's available, and then I get depressed because everything looks like there doesn't seem like an opening or a way. And then I just tell myself, like, be grateful for what you have, or make the most of it, or kind of, you know, lean into the parts that I don't like and use that as an edge of growth, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And when, as I'm saying this, I'm also aware that part of my challenge is I have a desire to move, but I don't know where I'd move to, right? So like the desire is kind of, it's a longing for something different that I think I could name, but there is no clear solution, right? There is no clarity of like that house or that neighborhood or that city or that kind of thing. So I think part of the challenge in this conversation is I'm not really sharing I'm sharing my frustration, but without a solution. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not even clear on what my longing or desire is for.
I'm going to challenge you on that. The longing is very clear. You don't want to be in the place you are. You want to get the fuck out. That's super clear. What's coming up is the mechanism that you need to somehow have an answer in order to validate the yearning. The yearning is there. I want to get the fuck out. I may not know where I want to go, but I know this is not it. And if we get into the world of, you know, polarity and embodied intimacy and the dynamics of attraction and magnetism and working with these energies of masculine and feminine, then in this frame, which is not the only frame to relate in, but it's one of the ones I love and I think works really well, if you are leaning into holding the feminine pole in the relationship, then you are showing up with one job and one job only: to show, express, live, embody that yearning. I want to get the fuck out of here. I want something else. I want something else. I want something else so bad. I want something else, right? Like that's what your work is, to just go so deep into the yearning. It is not to come up with a solution. I'm curious how that feels just when I say it in your body.
So I guess what I'm noticing there is like a stiffness around that and a stillness. Like I'm kind of like, oh, and not, you know, like, okay. I feel like there's a resistance. So it feels like my body, like my bones and my muscles, like the skeleton of me is sort of like, I don't know if bracing is quite the right energy around it, but there's like a stiffness of like, all right. And then because it feels like the yearning, say in my heart, that wants to melt into a puddle. So it feels like the skeleton is like holding and kind of maybe like preventing the puddle or something.
Yep. Yep. That feels true. And what do you have a sense of why you might be preventing the puddle? What feels scary about that?
It feels like maybe because I'll melt into nothingness. Like if my only job is to feel and express the yearning, like I'm like, whoa, so I just crawl around on the floor all day, like just pull my hair out and
Yes, exactly. But that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. But yes, keep going. You'd be like, oh God, I'd just be crawling around on the floor. Yes. And what's the problem with that?
Besides the fact that it's uber unproductive,
The capitalist agenda surfaces its head.
But I think just even relationally, if he's home, and I'm kind of it fucking sucks or like whatever the ugh, and I'm carrying that energy everywhere I go, I guess the what's wrong with that or what the fear is of why would he want to live with a mad woman? Like that kind of thing of the I guess the fear of judgment or the non-acceptance of the visibility of it.
Why would he want to live with a mad woman? So there's an inner judgment of your feminine. That's something about being in the truth of your feelings, which is that you said yourself, like, if I actually embody the yearning, I would be crawling on the floor, doing nothing. And that's your truth. And so there's a judgment of that inside of you, like, that's not okay. And it's wild and somehow, or mad, and that somehow that's bad.
Yeah, and I what I'm kind of coming to my awareness it, as you're saying that is like I don't so I'm going back to like father stuff, right? There never felt like there was space for raw emotion in our house. And my sister had loads of it. And I'm sure I did too, but I just really quickly learned not to bring it into the room.
It served you. Yeah, you learned. You watched your sister have the dynamic. You were like, okay, now I know how the rules of the world work. And so I'm going to not be in my raw emotion because that supports me in getting the love I want. And that worked really well, and it helped you, and it gave you a lot of what you needed at the time. And it's clear now, like many protection mechanisms that we have, that it is now actually stopping you from having what you really want. And your mind can get on board with that from watching yourself, from this conversation, from future observations. And yet your body, and specifically your nervous system, is going to be operating on the old programming, right? Because that's how the neural pathways have been carved. That's how it just has been due. It's just the default setting. I don't crawl around on the floor and do nothing and just sit in my yearning, because that's not going to get me love. And then add on a layer of, like, you know, the productivity agenda in our world these days, and the two of those, the judgments, and there's no reason for you to be crawling on the floor. Your mind is like, that makes no sense. Why would I do that? Right. But there's a part of you that's like, that is actually a part of my truth.
Yeah. And what I'm realizing is, I have learned through a lot of the work we've done together I've given myself permission for me to crawl on the floor in my own space. Right.
Yeah.
But it's like when my husband's around, and I've named this before, even in the program we just did, when Chris was on the call, it's like, something in me shifts in his presence, where it's like, I stiffen, or I go into that thing where, like I was saying before, my muscles and my bones are kind of like holding. And so I feel like I want a way to like melt that in the presence of my partner. And, you know, if at some point I'm crawling and wailing on the floor in front of him, okay. But I don't feel like I need to go to like that degree. I think there's like an in between that could be feel really good. I guess that my question is like, where's the starting point?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to bookmark the question of where's the starting point, and I'm just going to ask a few things that came up, and just some curiosity questions. Do you feel that stiffening that you were talking about? Because you mentioned, when Chris's presence was on the call, something stiffened for you. That bracing started to come out. So do you feel it's primarily around men? Or is this any, like, relationally in any way?
Ooh, good question. So I notice it mostly around my partner. It wasn't so much in Chris's presence. It just, I was recalling that I mentioned that with him. But I would say it's probably a relational thing I've learned, because I noticed I had my parents visiting recently, and with both of them, so it didn't matter if it was my mom or my dad, I was just stiff the whole time. So my hunch is it's like a relational pattern that I learned.
So if you were in a room with other women, and you were asked as an exercise to embody this yearning, would that feel accessible to you?
Accessible and uncomfortable. But if I felt a level of safety, of like non-judgment, or like they were on that journey too, and I would, so like a sense of like, oh, they get me, then I would be able to.
Well, so it's really sounds like, you know, in your process of opening into more embodied expression of your feminine, what's happening is or let's pull out the word feminine, because sometimes it'll confuse people. The embodied expression of your heart. Okay, specific to this conversation. It sounds like you've been really working on cultivating that safe space and relationship with yourself, and that's become an easy, such like easier. Okay, maybe it's not super easy yet, but like that's a practice you've been cultivating the last few years with our work, with your own work. And you're when we think about, you know, the three circles, it's like there's the three circles within each other. It's like the center circle is like me and myself, right? Like working out stuff with me and myself. The circle around is like me in a safe space with other women. And then that final circle is the world, which will include the men and specifically the romantic relationship and dynamic. And so it sounds like that first circle is pretty, pretty chill at this point. Like you're like, yeah, I got this. Mm-hmm. Like I can do it. And the middle one is also like it's stretchy, but I can do it if it's the right people and the right space. And it's really about you. I'm seeing you now working that final circle.
Yeah, it feels right.
Going, oh, okay. Yeah, it's time to feel comfortable in the embodied expression of my heart in the world / with my partner / with my parents, right? Which are like, they are the, it's like, that's the final frontier.
Thank God.
always. Yeah, yeah. You're like, there's an end. So here's the thing. So I think first just acknowledging, okay, I'm widening, I'm growing. The ripple is coming out right from the center of the circle to that medium circle to the big circle. And that's already a lot of work that you've done. So why don't you take a moment and celebrate how much you've opened your heart to yourself and to women around you, and how you're in this beautiful exploration of how do I feel safe now to open even further around my partner and then eventually the world. And this is why we often say romantic relationship is actually the most transformative personal development container, because it is, it's that final circle. And when you've figured it out, once you've worked and stretched your nervous system to be able to do this with your partner, then the world is easy. It truly is, because your partner is the symbol of the world, right? Our partners are the representation of the outside of us. and it's going to bring up all our programming from our childhood and parents and stuff. So it's like we're working all of that. And when we're babies, I mean, our parents are the symbol of the outside world. And so we're working out our parent stuff through our romantic partner pretty much always. I've yet to see a situation where that's not the case, and there might be, right? And so just honoring that, wow, you're there. Like you've made it this far. You've done so much work that you're like, oh, all right. It sounds crazy to be, you know, quote unquote, puddling around the living room and you're yearning, but actually you're at mastery level of embodiment now. And this is the work of Tantra and embodiment, is to go so deep into the yearning that it actually is nearly theatrical and ridiculous. Because like you said, you don't actually have to be sobbing, wailing, crawling around on the floor for the rest of eternity. But sometimes we have to tip the scales so far in that direction, because there's so much stiffening, because there's so much bracing, that it's like we nearly have to shock our system so extreme the other way that we find the balance of what's actually true. So that in the future, when there's new yearnings, it's not going to be crawling on the floor necessarily, but the feeling can be transmitted through your embodiment with you just standing. You know what I mean? But when we're baby mastery level, we may have to crawl on the floor, like actually do it. And for a moment, it may not be for long, but just to be able to touch the actual feeling in ourselves, in our hearts.
And just so I can clarify, crawling on the floor in the presence of my partner. Or just with an empty home.
Well, the empty home is going to be easy for you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is step one, sure. Embody the yearning on your own. I mean, that's part of the practice of dropping into your deepest desires, right? In your own space, in a container with a couple of songs. You've heard me say this before. And the reason we do that solo practice is to go deeper and deeper and deeper, because then when we are in the relational space, we'll maybe only go into level one of yearning. And let's say there's, I'm just going to make up, like, you got 10 levels. We, by the way, have never ending levels. But let's say you're just like in layer one relationally, but you've been working layer 10 solo. But if you didn't work layer 10 solo, you probably wouldn't even be able to hit layer one relationally. And so it is both. It's not one or the other. But it's also, what's really beneficial is when we are in relationship and we happen to be women that are in partnership with men, okay, in that particular situation, it actually works out really well, because the male nervous system is a little bit denser. And the way the physiology of the male brain requires way more theater or way more obviousness and in your faceness of anything for them to get it. They're not, it's truly an actual physiological characteristic in the male brain. They require a more obvious, you know, they did these studies that the little baby girls can scan the faces of their moms for nuance a lot more than little baby boys. It's quite fascinating. So it's a way in which the little girls, like, create safety emotionally, is like they're really scanning for every single little subtle emotional layer. And so they pay attention to muscles and the face and different little expressions. And the little boys are less into that. And I think one theory was, this is, by the way, from a couple of books by, I believe it's Louise Brizendine is her name. We'll put that in the show notes as well. But she has one book called The Male Brain, one book called The Female Brain. And, you know, obviously we're moving into just a portion of history. I'm just going to sort of say this as a side note, where it isn't so black or white. So obviously she's speaking to one extreme side of the spectrum. Now we know that, you know, all of us are on a spectrum here, and it's just a matter of, but if you take a very essentially, like, hardcore one end of the spectrum, male brain, and one end of the spectrum, female brain, there's some interesting differences. And one of them is that women tend to scan for the subtlety and nuance in the face musculature, because we don't have the physical strength as much. And so it's a way that we protect ourselves. Not to go too far off on a tangent and nerd out on this, but essentially, you know, this is, it's important for us to know that what you may perceive as overly dramatic, like, I'm on the floor, like, have you ever had this experience where you are, like, on the verge of crying for like 3 hours, and your partner has no clue, and then you start sobbing and they're like, wait, that came out of nowhere. That used to happen to me all the time. And I'm like, what do you mean out of nowhere? If a woman was around me, if any of my girlfriends were around me, they would have picked that up before I did. You know, and so that's the difference. There truly is a very interesting thing. And so with a lot of males, it's like you actually have to cry for them to realize you're sad or upset. And they often are like thrown off. Like, wait, what? Why is she crying right now? It's like, what do you mean? Why am I crying? Have you not felt me the last 6 hours? And it's not that they don't care. It's that their nervous system literally does not pick up on it. And so you crawling on the floor, just to come back to that. Yes, we can joke about like, okay, that's a little dramatic, but honestly, it may not actually be for your partner. And so what's the, so coming back to what's the starting point, because obviously you're not just going to tomorrow, like throw yourself on the floor and be like, although I will say one thing I've learned through the David Data lineage and through John Wineland's work is this concept of sacred theater, which, by the way, as a side note, I absolutely hate and I have so much resistance to. But here's why it's awesome. It completely shocks your nervous system out of habit. So if we are some, like, so if you and I, let's say, have the mechanism of contracting and bracing when we are around our partners, then actually the prescription for that is to go so dramatic that it's nearly, it's like over the top times 100 that makes it, it gives it more permission somehow to go all the way there. And it also really is so extreme that it sort of shocks your system and instantly breaks the habit.
So you go all the way there into what you're already doing, or all the way there in the opposite direction?
No, all the way in the opposite direction.
Yeah,
into being on the floor and wailing. Yeah. Right. So this is, it's a very intentional, conscious practice that, and that's why it's called theater, because it's like, it is so dramatic. Like truly you're just going all the way into the opposite. If that feels completely like, just not accessible to the dynamic, then starting to bring it to the extent that you can to him is really, really important. And the only way to start to feel like you can drop into that just a little bit is by going so deep in your solo practice. Because it's like, again, I always use the analogy of going to the gym. If you've been working out certain muscles so hard with particular practices at the gym, right? Let's say, I don't know, you're like squatting or something. Then when you're standing at home, just standing, you're not trying to do it, certain muscles are going to be more engaged because you squatted earlier in that day. Emotionally, it's the same thing. If you did the solo practice and wailed on the floor, there's a little bit more of that that you will just naturally bring to the relationship. Mm. And there has to be a constant checking of the program that goes, I must find a solution. I can only bring it to him if I have like, hey, let's move to this city. Or, hey, I found the way in which we can do this in an affordable manner.
Yeah.
Because also you have to understand that this is a direct correlation to how you interact with life, with God, with universe. You don't have to bring the solution. It is a co-creative process. You get to bring your yearning. You get to go, oh God, I just want this so bad. And I don't know how to get it. And what if I lean back and let go of the how?
I'm laughing to myself because I'm noticing that I'm in that same exact place, just around this practice itself, right? So I'm sitting here saying to myself, okay, so I practice yearning on my own, and then after that, I'll go to him and say, like, or like, I'm like stuck in the question, but what will I say, right? Because that's still that outcome oriented place in me, and so I'm catching myself and laughing, and when you're saying like it's how you relate to life, because I'm relating that thing to this practice. I'm like, yeah, you know, you just yearn, and don't think past there. Like, just yearn and see what unfolds.
Yeah, because that's also being present in the now. It's not about future projecting. And here's the piece that's going to be a little bit tough to hear. When we as women try to solve it, and understandably so, right? We grew up in a world where we're supposed to figure it out. So no fault on us. And what we do when we come in trying to offer a possible solution is we provide no opportunity for the masculine to rise. Mm. And so we are automatically trying to do it ourselves, which is not always a bad skill by any means. It's great being independent. It's great cultivating your own inner masculine. But if you're now doing both, if you're working, you've got the inner feminine, you've got the inner masculine, you're in this beautiful, like, sacred union, but you're not bringing just the feminine to the external relationship with an actual other human being, then it makes it really difficult for him to show up for you and to feel useful. And to feel like he can provide, and to feel like he can come and save the day with a solution. Because he's like, well, she's already figuring it out. We're trying to figure it out. It's an energetic where you have to come with the yearning and the gaping hole of desire in you so that he can come and literally penetrate it with his energy and consciousness. So you're here going, I need, I want, I yearn. And that's like energetically space. It's a pulling in, and it's an asking for something to fill the space. But if you come in and try to fill the space, then he has nowhere to be. He's like, where do I go? Where's my space? There's no space for me to fill. Hmm. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I can share what's coming up for me and you saying is there's like a trust piece, right? And I'm recognizing that it's even beyond, it feels like there's a triad of trusts going on, right? It's like, do I trust him? But do I trust source? Do I trust that source is working through him? And so, yeah, that I'm just aware, like, that's kind of what was in my view as you were saying that.
Yeah. The piece with Tantra that can be very challenging for all of us is that we have to go first. Right. So relationally with source, with a partner, with the world, we have to go, fuck it, I'm going first. And that's the trust fall. And it sucks. It's the worst. No one wants to do it. We all feel like we're going to die because there's always that moment in the trust fall when you lean back where you're like, oh shit, no one's going to catch me. And then it's always right after that moment that you have that thought that you get caught. And so here, a similar thing is occurring, right? It's like, oh, well, I need there to be trust first, which means I need to lay down the foundation. My mind knows how to lay down the foundation by trying to problem solve to come to a conclusion. That makes me feel like I can trust more, feel safe more. But it hasn't really been getting you what you want because you're still in the same place geographically.
Yeah.
Right. And so, what if you were like, all right, you know what? I don't know if this is going to work out. And my only option is to go first. My devotion is to go first. My deepest practice is to go first. Which means creating the space of yearning and seeing if he will come meet it. And he may not. That's why we don't want to do it. Why do we not want to pray out into the universe and be like, I deeply want this, that, and that? We often don't do that because, or we don't do it fully because, same thing, we don't want to not be met because that's the worst feeling in the world. But what we then end up doing is we don't give ourselves the opportunity to be met at all by saying, oh, well, what if there's a chance I'm not met? And so let me just not even try it. But there's one of two things that are going to happen. If you really open up the space, he's either going to meet you or he's not. And if he meets you, amazing, poof, you get everything you want. And if he doesn't, it may seem like the end of the world, but it's actually just opening up space for whatever is going to finally meet you. Because that space of yearning is so magnetic that it will pull in the person, the scenario, the opportunity, the money, that whatever it is. But you have to fully open into it. And so when we're bracing, we're like, well, cognitively, I'm desiring this thing. I want to move. Okay, your mind knows that. You're very clear about it. But you haven't energetically opened up the space for it. Do you feel the difference between those two, like the cognitive and the somatic?
Oh yeah, like the cognitive, it's the extent of a sentence. Like that's as much space it takes up, whereas like the yearning is like it can spread as far as eternity. Like, yeah.
Exactly, eternity. That's how powerful it is. And I'm curious also how, by you opening into that yearning, what would shift in intimacy?
Yeah, I am too. I think what I noticed just in my body around that is, well, I'm not sitting up straight, but in a good way, you know, like just the spine's a little more relaxed. So the stiff holding that was there before is sort of shape shifting a bit. And yeah, it feels like it's finding the relaxing into something, you know, like, you know, when you kind of like slide down like the side of a pool into warm water, there's like a relaxation that can happen, and just sort of sliding into it, as opposed to the energy of like picking up and moving all the objects and making sure they're in the right place and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. This is about letting heart be the boss. Not the mind. The mind has a beautiful role in your life. We're not firing the mind. We're not demoting the mind. We're just shifting the role of the mind. And we're just going, oh, you know what? There's this power that I've had this whole time, but that I didn't have access to, and that the world didn't teach me how to use. And it's the power of yearning. And so I'm going to work that one out a little for a while, build that muscle. And then they'll all work in partnership. Ultimately. Because you can come with the yearning, and then, you know, let's say in the best case scenario, your partner feels that energetic space and feels he can enter it, literally take it up, fill it. And so he comes in and goes, okay, let's talk about it. What, and maybe provide some options. And then your mind can come on and be like, here are some other options. And then you get to move into partnership work, which is a lot more just, you know, two people figuring it out. But before that, there has to be a place for the polarity. There has to be a place for you to go, oh, I just want this so bad. And to see, does he want to come meet that? And is he capable? Because we're also, there's always a portion where the partner has work to do. And where they might not be on the journey of that. They may not be willing. We can never know, but as long as we don't try, we're not going to know either way. So we might as well try it. And then at least there's a 50% chance of being met versus stiffening. You'll stay 100% not being met because there's no space for him to come meet you anyways. So mathematically, if we want to get your mind on board with this practice, even though it feels scary as fuck to your nervous system, it's like mathematical there's a higher mathematical probability of you getting what you want and being met if you actually open. But there's a zero chance if, you know, things continue as is because there's no space.
So I have a practical question. So I hear, I guess, all right, so let me just name, let me practice this right now. I'm like, oh, I want this really bad, right? I want that level of like partnership and that polarity. It's like, oh, right? Like I feel that in me. And I'm looking forward, or I don't, you know, kind of like, all right, yes, like, I'll start practicing this on my own. I'm curious, like just, I recognize it's a process, and in my day to day, I'd love for like in those small moments of like a yearning for a hug or something that's like really small, right? I know I get stuck of like, how do I bring that in the moment? Like the, so yeah, I'm curious if you have, I know we've done work around breath. Yeah. So like, where do I start? Like in that, I really want a hug.
Exactly how you said it. It's really, really pretty simple. It's, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's simple. Because there's nothing more innocent than someone going, I really want to hug. Like it's so inviting. Who's not going to hug that person? Now, if that other person is in their own shit and going through whatever, that's their work. They may not be available for a hug. They may be under resourced. They may be busy. They may be in the middle of a work meeting. Like we don't know, but that's not on you to decide.
Yeah.
You just go, I want a hug.
And I noticed even in that it was so natural for me right here with you to say what I want, whereas I think a lot of times I go, I ask, can I have a hug? And that feels like it's a different energy too.
Yeah, because it's apologetic. It feels a little apologetic. It's like, I just want a hug. Like you're just saying it. But there's no attachment. There's no apology. There's no expectation, requirement, demand. You're just like, I'd love to have a hug. It's like for a period of time when I was first getting into this work around owning my desires and my yearning, I would just like walk around and be like, I really want sushi and just see like what happens. Like not being like, hey, can we go out for sushi tonight? Right, which seems similar. This is like, I'm just funny. Oh, I'm just craving that salmon. Da, 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 da. You know, like I just go into it and then poof, before you know it, we have a reservation at a sushi restaurant. Or my girlfriend messages me and it's like, hey, you want to go eat sushi? You know, like it's not even just in the romantic realm, but just start to practice like, I really would like this and see what happens.
I'm
I think that's
excited.
actually a great, yeah, I think that's a great little thing, you know, and you can verbalize that. Like, again, it doesn't have to be this like acted out nonverbal, interpretive dance laying on the floor. Like, although that's fun too in its own way, but it's like it can start off with these little things like, I just want this. And now, I want this. And if you don't give it to me, I'm going to be mad in 5 seconds, right? Which is different energy. Or, is it okay if I want this? Is it okay? Right. And then people are like, I don't know. But a woman claiming her desire, that's strong. That's magnetic. It's powerful. It's potent. And it works. It's magical.
That feels good.
Yeah, I feel like that's the landing spot for us today.
It feels like being able to have a magic wand and actually use it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And start off small. Start off small and see how it goes. And go keep going deep in the solo practice, obviously. Then the final piece, notice when your mind tries to come in and come up with the solid ground of certainty and conclusion and solutions. And go, you know what? Thank you, mind. Thank you, thank you. And we're not doing that right now in this season, actually. But I'll call you when I'm ready for you.
Put you on hold.
Awesome. Thank you so
Thank
much.
you.
I love you guys so much. Thank you for listening. We would love for you to rate and review the show, and I'd love to know your takeaways from the episode. You can do that by DMing me on Instagram at Nadia Munla.